Off the Record, the weekly KOTO public affairs show that offers you, the listener, an opportunity to hear in-depth conversations on community topics and issues that matter. As always, you are encouraged to join the conversation by calling 728-4333. Now here's your host.
Good evening, KOTO listeners. This is Matt Hoisch from the KOTO News Team. Thank you for joining for another installment of Off the Record. Before we kick off the show tonight, I do want to start with a brief note that during this hour, we are going to be discussing issues around sexual assault and other topics related to it. Definitely a hard but important conversation and something we do want to signal right up front. Sexual assault, it's really much more than a statistic. But to start off, the statistics really do paint a pretty challenging picture. According to the CDC, a little less than 3% of men and 20% of women have experienced completed or attempted rape during their lifetime. In childhood, 1 in 13 boys and 1 in 4 girls experience sexual abuse. The numbers really do paint a pretty staggering picture in a lot of ways. In San Miguel County, we observe May as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So as May 1st approaches this Saturday, we are very glad to be joined for this hour by Shannon Dean, Executive Director of the San Miguel Resource Center, and Claudia Garcia Corcio, Community Engagement Manager for SMRC. Thank you both so much for joining.
Thanks, Matt, for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Listeners, we are going to be chatting this hour about sexual assault, why it's an issue, why we should all be concerned about it, and what we can do to create a safer community for everyone. We'll also have a little bit of good music along the way. Before we get going, also want to throw out that the National Sexual Assault Hotline is 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-4673. First question I really actually want to ask both of you is, how did you each get involved in work around sexual assault and domestic violence? Claudia, do you want to start?
Sure. So I've been with the San Miguel Resource Center for now, it's coming up 5 years actually. And how I got involved, it was kind of like the need to have someone in my position to be bicultural and bilingual. 30% of our population is Spanish speaking. It wasn't something that I was dying to get into. I think it kind of just happened. But it's also very personal to me. I grew up in a domestic violence home as a child, so I witnessed domestic violence in growing up. So I think I kind of like fell into it because I felt like my mom couldn't get help. So I feel like I'm helping a lot of our community members that, you know, are going through domestic violence to kind of navigate the process of, there's so many layers of things that a survivor and victim goes through with sexual assault or domestic violence. So it's been very rewarding to kind of be that advocate and support to someone when my mother didn't have one. So.
Shannon?
Yeah, my story is very much the same as Claudia's. I came to this work as a survivor. I was in a domestic abuse relationship for a little more than 3 years. That, like most relationships like that, included sexual assault and domestic intimate partner violence. And so, you know, like Claudia said, I didn't know of, I wasn't aware of, and I didn't have any resources like San Miguel Resource Center offers. And every day on this job, I find things that I just think, God, what if I had had that? What if I had that kind of support or known someone that I could reach out to like this, I think it would have changed my life. And so I'm glad to be part of an organization that can create that change for others.
Claudia, could you also just briefly outline, I guess, what are the services that San Miguel Resource Center offers and really just paint a picture of what it is for anyone who maybe isn't familiar with it?
Yeah, so we have so many things, but I think the most important one would be prevention. We have a male and a female prevention educator that goes into the schools, and I'm talking like everywhere. Paradox, Nuclid, Natarita, here in Telluride, Norwood. They even have gone to Ridgeway to kind of have a curriculum that builds prevention. Like, what does it mean to be in a healthy relationship when we talk about consent? You know, like, may I give you a hug, or may I borrow your pencil? Like, starting everything is kind of like age appropriate. And so we have, you know, the prevention ed that goes into the schools. And I think that's kind of like the baseline. If we come in and do these prevention, then in the future, we wouldn't have, I guess, survivors or even victims going through it, because we're teaching this as, you know, as children. And then we have client services manager who kind of oversees all of the staff and gets all the numbers and does a lot of clients and services and how we're doing, how are we providing services to our community, to our clients. That's something that we do. My job specifically is I primarily work with the Latinx community, Spanish-speaking, and I wear a lot of hats in that due to the lack of, like, language justice in our community. Shannon, you can share some of those too, what other things we have.
We're currently working on a SANE program, so certifying medical professionals to become nurse examiners to take sexual assault forensics exams. Mm-hmm. So what that is not only about the exam, but really providing a trauma-informed response for survivors. Because, you know, having an exam, and especially an exam that involves taking evidence following a sexual assault, is a traumatic experience. It feels invasive, it's scary, and through this training, we are teaching medical providers how to perform those examinations and collect that evidence in the most trauma-informed way, so you're not re-traumatizing and you really are caring for the survivor as a whole person and not just addressing this one issue that happened in their life. Along with that, we have the coordinated community response. So law enforcement, the DA, and different advocacy programs review cases that have been closed in the past. And so we look at sexual assault cases, domestic violence cases, child abuse cases, and we see, are there places where we can make improvements? Are there ways where the system has failed the victim in some way or another that we can improve on?
Mm. And we also have, we have a plethora of services. So if you're a victim of a survivor of domestic violence or sexual assault, we provide legal assistance. So if someone's going through a divorce, custody, we try to help with that legal process. It's so much paperwork, it's very overwhelming. And we kind of provide, you know, hiring an attorney and paying some of those fees. We also have a therapy assistance fund that helps anyone with trauma to get up to 6 sessions of therapy. And then we also have like a safe housing. If you're leaving in a high crisis, if you have a crisis, we can safe house you for up to like 3 to 5 nights. We don't have a safe house here, but we do work closely with a couple of community partners that we can safe house a victim or a survivor. We also have like any kind of like financial assistance, we kind of support in any kind of way. When we talk about domestic violence, we talked about power and control. And so a lot of the times victims and survivors lose that control and power to make decisions. So we kind of help them financially if that was taken away from them. So we have like a lot of services, and anyone that has been a victim of a crime can come and seek our services. We can listen, we can navigate, we can kind of, you know, tell you where you need to go. If it is mental health, there's mental health professionals. It's a lot. So
there's so much, and I continue to be astonished with the services available in our community, especially at the Resource Center. It's so much. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment you'd want to share, give us a call, 970-728-4333. Again, 970-728-4333. One of the first questions that comes to my mind as I hear about all these services, though, is money. I mean, what role does money play? Do people have to pay for these services? How does that work with the Resource Center?
all of the services that we provide to clients are free of charge to the client. We are entirely grant funded, so through local foundations as well as state and national grants. We apply for these grants, and they have different cycles. Some of them we apply on a yearly basis, and some of them are up to 3 years. But that's where all of our money comes from and allows us to do the work that we do for absolutely free. And I think it's worth mentioning, too, most of our services, you don't have to have been a recent victim of any type of violence. A lot of our services extend years and years in the past, because we find that, you know, a lot of times, especially survivors that experienced abuse in their childhood, it takes a long time to come around to be able to talk about it. And we still want to be able to provide those services, even if it happened 10 years ago.
Do we have statistics on the prevalence of sexual assault and domestic violence in our community?
I brought statistics for 2020, just specifically for sexual assault, because that's what we were focusing on today. So in 2020, SMRC served 24 survivors of sexual assault. And according to the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, only about 25% of survivors ever report or talk to anyone about sexual assault. So, you know, if we play that math out, then, you know, we could be looking at 96 up to 100 people that have experienced this in our community, but a quarter of them aren't talking about it. And that's what we want to change.
I know there was a lot of conversation, especially last year, around how COVID could affect things like domestic abuse, sexual assault, potentially an increase as you saw more people just cooped up in their houses. Did the Resource Center last year, I mean, see that expected increase due to COVID?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. We tracked numbers from the beginning of COVID because we knew it would be a concern. And it seemed like through the beginning and the middle of, you know, our long experience with COVID, our numbers were going down. And so, you know, at first we're thinking, this is hopeful. Maybe it's not as bad as we anticipated that it might be. But now looking at the numbers, 2019 compared to 2020, we saw a 16.26% increase in people seeking our services for domestic violence specifically. And most of that happened between January and now.
And we've also seen there's been clients coming to us that have been clients of ours, but we've spent more time with them because due to the trauma. It could have been COVID, it could have been cooped up at home. Even though our numbers didn't increase so high, we look that we spend more time with certain clients. So our interactions seemed like we were super busy, but it was also how long we spent with one specific client or two clients or whatnot. But it did definitely, there was a higher need and we didn't stop working. Like it was like we were working the entire time during COVID, even during like shutdown. And we were still trying to provide those services through like Zoom or a phone. It was hard to navigate that, but we had to figure it out.
You had an increase in numbers. Was there any kind of a change in the reasons people were seeking out SMRC or just a change in the challenges people were experiencing?
I think it was more of like being cooped in a home. Definitely there was like, you know, we had, I can't be specific about a case, but we definitely saw a sexual assault case. We saw domestic violence. Like, yes, there was like more of like, because you were forced to be in a home and deal with your issues and you couldn't go to the bar, you couldn't like, you know, get out of the house. Those numbers definitely increased and there was more people reaching out to services. Even after COVID, some people reached out and be like, you know, we were in quarantine for so long that the relationship has ended. I need guidance. How do I file for divorce? So there was definitely like during COVID, there was a little bit of spike, but then after when restrictions started to come down, there was also more people reaching out.
Yeah. And like Claudia was saying, now we're in the period where we're seeing clients with higher needs. So, you know, where in a normal year without quarantine and things like that, clients could come in more regularly, and kind of talk through things and work on safety plans and update those safety plans and things like that. And so, you know, we were seeing clients on a more steady basis, but, you know, following quarantine and all of that, now those needs have just increased and stacked on one another. So we're having to do a lot more extensive and a lot more in-depth work with clients due to that compounding nature.
And I think also the increase of, like, you know, when you leave an abusive relationship and, you know, the perpetrator or somebody else, like, tries to use that power, COVID was kind of like a buffer of, like, I'm going to still use that power and control and keep the kids because you were exposed to COVID, so I'm going to, like, use the kids and you can't see them. And court wasn't in person. It was really hard to even file for a lot of things. And so, again, there was, like, anything to do with custody or, you know, it's kind of exchanging of the children, a lot of those also increased. So there was more people coming in and be like, can you help me navigate this? And due to COVID, a lot of the times is like, you know, we have to follow like COVID protocols. And so again, there was like a kind of like a swing of things that was happening.
Yeah. Well, as part of this hour, we also asked both of you to select a couple of songs that you thought would be good to intersperse through the hour. Here at CODA, we are firm believers that even the toughest of conversations can benefit from a little bit of music also. So we're going to intersperse a couple of these songs throughout the hour. One of the songs we'll start with from actually a local artist is The Dress by our very own Emily Scott Robinson. Do either of you want to say anything about why you chose this?
So Emily used to have my position. She used to work at the Resource Center. And I think the song has to do with, like, you know.
Yeah, it touches on a lot of the things that go through your mind following assault. Kind of as you listen to the song, you know, it's titled The Dress, and it's about this dress. And the question is, you know, what did I do to cause this? And the sad reality is that's the brain of a survivor, is that I did something to make this happen to me, and that's just not true. And I think that's what this song really exposes, is, you know, going through, is it because I drank alcohol? Is it because, you know, my dress was a little too short? Is it because, you know, I wasn't paying enough attention? You know, we turn to blaming ourselves, and that's really what this song is all about. Mm-hmm.
Well, here is The Dress by Emily Scott Robinson.
White cotton dress, but tied at the waist, bare summer arms and eyelid lace. Not short and not long, comes down to the knee, on top of the laundry, folded and clean. But I could have sworn that I threw that thing away back in June. Snuck out to the alley and buried it under the trash one afternoon. I can't trust my memory anymore. Was it the dress I wore? Was it the wine he poured? Was there some sign I ignored? Was there even time to run from that storm? Go crazy, just hold my breath, keep it all safe, locked up in my chest. Deadbolt the front door, don't answer the phone, sleep with the lights on, afraid of being alone. And I go back through every detail like a photograph in my mind, searching for what I did wrong. I never find it in time. Was it the dress I wore? Was it the wine he poured? Was there some sign I ignored? Was there even time to run from that storm?
The Dress by Emily Scott Robinson. Listeners, if you are just tuning in, this is Off the Record. I'm Matt Hoisch from the Kodo News team. Tonight, we are chatting about sexual assault in honor of Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which typically is in April, but in San Miguel County, we observe it in May. We are joined by Shannon Dean and Claudia Garcia Curcio from the San Miguel Resource Center. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to share on air, give us a call, 970-728-4333. We were chatting when the song was playing a little bit off air about kind of the challenges of reporting and working through sexual assault in a small community. Can both of you, I guess, just share kind of your experiences with that? Because, yeah, it just sounds like it's much harder to do in a lot of ways in a small place than in a larger place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's estimated that 10% more people don't report in rural areas, and it's due to that small town, everybody knows everybody. There's the feeling that as soon as you make a report, then there are lots of things that can happen to you socially. You can be ostracized. You can bring the downfall of, you know, someone else in the community. So you lose friend groups. And then, you know, there's a huge issue of housing, especially when we're talking about domestic violence specifically. You know, if I'm going to leave my partner, and in doing that, I'm going to have to move out of my house, then where do I live? And, you know, that may mean moving from Telluride to Montrose, and then that turns into needing to commute to work or not having a job anymore. You know, so there are lots of factors and lots of barriers to reporting. And then, you know, like we talked about before with sexual assault, there's the whole law enforcement process. There's having to tell the story of this horrific thing that happened to you over and over and over again, which is traumatizing in itself. And plus there's a fear that, you know, nothing may happen. And I've done all of this and I've exposed myself and I've made myself vulnerable for no reason, for no outcome. And so all of those are things that SMRC is working to overcome, but it's a very large wall to climb.
I think it's just like, we live in a fishbowl. So, you know, it's, I feel like because it's a small town, there is that fear of like confidentiality, but I think it's important to always bring it up that working at the resource center, you know, we work highly on confidentiality. If someone comes in, you know, we want them to trust us and come in, that everything that is said in this room is nowhere. You know, we work highly on that, and we also like have release of information. You know, if a victim decides that they no longer want to work with law enforcement, that is their choice. We don't force anyone to make a report. It's really up to them, the decisions that they make. And it's definitely hard because it's you re-traumatize yourself if you decide to make a report. Not saying that that happens all the time, but there's definitely that, like, law enforcement is here to get evidence and ask you questions, and there's a process that they go by. And for a lot of the times, victims don't want to go through that process, and that's okay. You know, when someone comes in, we share our services and their options, and they choose what they want to do. Yeah. And the most important, I think, that I've working at the Resource Center is confidentiality. Like, we work highly on confidentiality, because we, you know, we want people to come to us and we want to support them. And it at any point they don't, you know, want to come back and seek our services, that's up to them. But we want to know that we're doing a good job and we're keeping confidentiality with our community.
Yeah. And if you follow us on Facebook or Instagram, listen up, because this is your answer to the Tuesday trivia question. A lot of times, you know, we talk about high school students and how they're affected by sexual violence, and often alcohol is involved. Even with adults, there may be drugs involved, things like that. And so that can be another barrier to reporting. But law enforcement, and, you know, we want to make it really clear that if you are underage and you were drinking and you were raped and you report, that underage drinking is not the issue and it's not a concern, and law enforcement does not care. If you were using drugs and you were raped and you report, the drug use is not the issue. So I think that's something that keeps people from reporting a lot of times, is fear of getting in trouble for these other things that are involved. But we just want to make it really clear that that's not happening.
Going back to the small town concerns, what if, I don't know, what if someone's concerned going to the resource center, they'll end up talking to someone that they know who works there?
I mean, that happens. You know, I think people have come in and I've been very like forward and be like, do you feel comfortable working with me because I know you? And they can choose to be like, I'm fine working with you, Claudia, or be like, I would prefer to talk to someone else. So again, it is up to, it's their choice where, you know, or a lot of the times, like if I know someone, but I don't really know someone and they come in, I will still ask them, do you feel comfortable, you know, me advocating for you and supporting you? And a lot of the times it's like, yes, you know, it's not, for me, it hasn't been an issue. There's definitely been times that I've had to remove myself. If I know someone, just because I also need to take care of myself. And if I don't, want to know too much, and I'm too close to that friend group, I don't want to know about the case. I kind of remove myself from the situation to kind of take care of myself in a way. Mm-hmm. But we're here to support anyone, and everyone can come in. And I think the biggest thing, it's like, it's not just women. You know, I think anyone should feel comfortable coming into the resource center. Men, anyone, whatever identity you fall in or expression, I think that's their biggest, you know, we want to be inclusive of everyone that's been a victim of a crime.
Yeah, and along with the confidentiality standards that Claudia talked about, it's consent, consent, consent. So we ask for consent anytime we share information with anyone, even amongst ourselves. So we ask for the client's consent to even talk to one another about a particular case. So nothing is ever under the table. And, you know, like she said, we always ask, do you feel comfortable talking about this? Do you feel comfortable talking to me? Do you feel comfortable with me talking to my coworkers or the lawyer or the therapist? And all of that is very explicit consent from the client.
You've already both touched on this a bit with, you know, some of the things you've already been saying, but are there any, from your perspective, common misconceptions about sexual assault and also just getting support for being a survivor of sexual assault? Just any common misconceptions you found in your work that either holds people back or you think is just an unfair misconception?
Age and gender, I think. You know, the stereotypical picture of a person that experiences sexual assault is usually a woman in their late 20s, early 30s. But that's not the case. I mean, statistically, ages 12 to 34 have the highest rates. With men, it's about 10% of survivors are men. And while it's estimated that 1 in 6 women will experience attempted or completed sexual assault, the number for men is 1 in 23. So, you know, it happens to anyone. It doesn't matter. And I think those numbers are even higher when you're talking about transgender, transsexual, bisexual, you know, that population, the LGBTQIA population, those numbers increase exponentially.
And I think also when we talk about sexual assault, a lot of the times people think rape. No, I'm talking like any kind of like sexual contact. Someone touch you inappropriately, someone, you know, like I think a lot of the time people think like, oh, well, it wasn't, they didn't rape me. So there's no reason for me to report something. You know, I think it's important if you feel violated any kind of way, that's why the Resource Center is here. And if you want to make a police report, that's why we're here. A lot of the times we go with clients to make them feel comfortable to make a police report. We're just there to kind of hold their hand and be a support system, and anything that they would want to share or make a report. And also just kind of like, knowing that if, you know, coming in to the Resource Center and you change your mind about making a report, again, that is your choice. Just because you came in and, you know, trauma brain works in really like different. And I think a lot of the times people's like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? But I think people need to understand when you go through a traumatic event, things don't go like they're supposed to. They're not like in order in how you need to do things. I think when you come to the Resource Center, validating that victim and client is very important, because a lot of the times they feel out of control, and we're just there to be like, it's okay. If you change your mind, you change your mind.
Yeah.
I think we want to empower clients and give them that power back to make their own decisions.
And no one can know what it feels like or what the thought process is until you've been through it. There's no way to explain what that's like to
There's
anyone.
No right way to cope with sexual assault. Like, there isn't.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you were just tuning in, this is Off the Record. I'm Matt Hoish from the Coto News team. Tonight we are chatting with Shannon Dean and Claudia Garcia Curcio from the San Miguel Resource Center about sexual assault. In May, San Miguel County, we observe Sexual Assault Awareness Month. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 970-728-4333. Claudia, earlier you mentioned some of the education work SMRC does with younger people around consent. And can you just, I guess, describe how you define and think of consent?
And I want to make a quick note. So Sexual Assault Awareness Month is usually nationwide in April, but because April was considered off season to us, we moved it to May. And I just wanted to clear that up, because I was like, I forgot to say that. Yes, I think for me, it's kind of like asking, like, is it okay if I kiss you? Is it okay if I hold your hand? Like, through the entire process, like, I think there should be consent. There should be like, is this okay? Like, I don't know, like that's like my way of like a healthy relationship, having those conversations with your partner of like, are you down with this? Is this okay? Communication is huge in having a healthy relationship and having like a base. So consent is important, and you need to have that conversation if that's going to be a healthy relationship, in my opinion.
And communication includes those nonverbal actions. You can tell when someone is uncomfortable. You can tell when you move closer and they lean back a bit. You know, that's not consent. That's coercion, you know, if you keep pressing forward. It's explicit. It's
fries. I don't know if it's fries. It's freely given. I can't remember. Freely given are, I can't remember, but it's fries. So there's like I should have written this down if Marissa was here, should know. But yes, it's, you know, when we've gone into the schools, you know, we share that with teens, you know. I should probably look it up.
He's got it.
It's freely given. Reversible,
yes.
Informed,
yes.
Enthusiastic,
yes.
And specific,
yes.
Fries.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Google. and so I guess what is I don't know. I feel like for some people the idea of teaching consent, what does that look like? Because that might sound, I don't know, something you teach. How do you do that?
It varies by age, and I think Chris and Liza do a really amazing job of addressing those differences. They start in the younger grades with high fives. Hey, can I have a high five? That's consent, because that child then has the option to say no. And if they do, they say, okay, cool, and go about their business, and it's not a big deal. I mean, that's consent at its most basic, you know? And I think parents can play a really huge role. I think, you know, there's the example of give grandma a kiss, you know, and the kid kind of shies and hides behind mom's elbow. Oh, come on, give grandma a kiss. She's only here for a week. And you kind of force the child to go give grandma a kiss. That's not teaching consent. And on the flip side of that, grandma needs to be fine with, my grandkid doesn't want to give me a kiss right now. That's cool. I'll go make some cookies and we'll be good, you know? So you can talk about it at a young age without it being sexual. Mm. Then when you start getting into middle school, high school, when relationships are evolving and forming, we talk about healthy relationships. Does a healthy relationship look like, you know, valuing each other's differences? Or talking about peer pressure, which is part of an unhealthy relationship, you know, things like that. That all leads to a deeper understanding of consent, even though you aren't explicitly talking about sex.
Mm. Well, we're a little bit more than halfway through, so I think it means it's time for another song. And one of the songs you also chose is Praying by Kesha. Want to say anything about that?
This one, I don't know. This one gets me in a lot of ways. I think it can be controversial in a way, because this is the angrier side, mm-hmm, of the survivor, but it's absolutely valid, you know. I think I would rather let this one speak for itself for, yep, the most part.
Here's Praying by Kesha.
Had me fooled. Told me that I was nothing without you. Oh, but after everything you've done, I can thank you for how strong I have become. 'Cause you brought the flames and you put me through hell. I had to learn how to fight for myself. And we both know all the truth I could tell. I'll just say this is, I wish you farewell. I hope you're somewhere praying, praying. I hope your soul is changing. Of who I am. No more monsters, I can breathe again. And you said that I was done. Well, you were wrong, and now the best is yet to come. 'Cause I can. You brought the flames and you put me through hell. I had to learn how to fight.
Praying by Kesha. I see what you meant when you said let that song speak for itself. That's really powerful. Listeners, if you are just tuning in, this is Off the Record. I'm Matt Hoyce from the Kodo News Team. Tonight we are chatting with Shannon Dean and Claudia Garcia Curcio from the San Miguel Resource Center, San Miguel County, because April's off season. We observe Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is usually in April. We observe it in May because off season. So in honor, May 1st is this Saturday, we are chatting about sexual assault in our community. And, you know, I think I would love to chat a bit about some of the things SMRC is doing for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, some of the activities, programs. What are y'all doing?
So we start tomorrow off with Denim Day. I don't know if you all looked at our social media. It kind of talks about what Denim Day is. So if you wear your denim and take a picture and tag us, that would be great.
Can you give a brief background on Denim Day?
I can't remember, but I can.
Yeah, I think I don't remember the year. I think it was 1997, yeah. But that's a guess. There was a case where a 16-year-old girl was driving with the driving instructor, and after the session, she went home and she told her parents that he sexually assaulted her. The case went to court, and the court determined that because her jeans were tight, that there is no way that a sexual assault could not have been committed without her assistance, so it must have been consensual. Because, and this is in quotes, as we all know, tight jeans can't be removed by another party without your help. And that was the basis of, you know, the decision for this rape case. And so, you know, he got away with it based on tight jeans. And, I think following the verdict, a group of people, I can't remember who, it was important people in politics and things like that, all wore denim to support this survivor and just the ridiculousness of the decision. And so that's why we wear denim on April 28th.
Yeah, to show that there is, like, no excuse for, you know, what happened. Like, when I read about this a while, it was in 1999 when I read about it, I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
I can't even.
So that's where we start. And then in the schools, we will be doing a youth art competition. So in all of the schools, we are putting out flyers. And the art can range from two-dimensional visual art to written word, short stories and poetry, videos and original songs. And on the flyers that are going to be in the schools, there is a QR code where students can upload their work to that QR code. It will be judged by a selection of law enforcement, DA, San Miguel Resource Center staff, and then the winning submissions will be, hopefully, we're still working on this piece, but hopefully exhibited in the art walk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then we partnered up with the library to do a book club on the book Missoula, I think, by John Kraken.
Krakauer, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But it's a really great book. It's, you know, a book about sexual assault in the college in Missoula. It's a really, really good book. So I think we're going to have 11 copies at the library. So pick it up if you're interested. And then we'll have a discussion June 8, which I think is a Tuesday. I'm not sure of the time yet, but we'll definitely post that on our social media for more information.
Yeah, and if you're a member of the Colorado Digital Consortium through your library and you're into audiobooks, you can get the audiobook for free that way as well.
Mm. And the bookstore opens back up next week, so it's also an option,
nice.
I guess.
Great.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 970-728-4333. I'm curious from both of your perspectives, how much do you think the way we think about and talk about sexual assault in our society has changed, I guess, in the last few decades? Because, I mean, even, I don't know, from my perspective, it feels like it has changed a lot, but I don't know. Do you think that's true, or do you think maybe over or underestimated?
I think it's absolutely true. I think it's not necessarily about the way we talk about it as much as that we do talk about it. it's such a hard discussion to have, and it's so uncomfortable to talk about, that, you know, many times we just choose not to. And for years and years, it was something that you weren't allowed to say out loud. You just swept it under the rug and you dealt with it and you sucked it up and moved on. But really, the Me Too movement was huge in starting that conversation on a nationwide level. And hopefully the conversation just keeps happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think even with the schools, you know, how do we talk about sex? You know, the culture is definitely changing. And I think we're learning. I think even, you know, as I'm not a parent, but like if you're a parent, like even starting talking to your kids about it, because growing up for me, I never talked about like sex, you know, with my parents. I didn't even know what sex was, you know, I think until I was like in high school, you know, or body parts, what, you know, don't give them nicknames.
Or is this normal?
Right.
You know,
like there's no need to be ashamed or of your, you know, your body parts or what that means. And I think there's definitely an appropriate way of, you know, having these conversations with your kids. But I think starting at a younger age, knowing body parts and having these conversations is really important. But when they do get to middle school or high school, they're not like, what is this? And they don't know. And I think thinking about not having sex, you know, getting older is like, it's going to happen. So let's talk about safety. Let's talk about how we have these conversations. Again, I'm not a parent, so I don't know, but I think it's important to start those conversations and not make it such a, like, a shame thing to talk about.
Well, and think about the alternatives, you know. If no one is talking to your child about sex and what a healthy relationship looks like and what consent sounds like, then they're still going to seek out that information, and they're going to find it through pornography, you know, and that's not what a healthy relationship looks like. It's not realistic. So they're going to get the information one way or another. It's just, which information are they going to get? And mm-hmm. And a parent has control of that, has control of how it's viewed and how it's talked about. And if you choose to give that control up to the internet, that's, in my opinion, that's not the best choice.
Does SMRC offer, have ways to help parents have those conversations too? Because I'd imagine there's some parents maybe listening who are maybe squirming.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yes.
We partner with Bright Futures and do parenting workshops that focus on boundary setting and identity and things like that. We also do our own parenting workshops through outreach. In 2020, we did 40 community education presentations and 54 community awareness events, like bigger, wider events. So we are definitely addressing it as much as we can.
And we definitely have had workshops where parents can have conversations with their, you know, teenagers that are going off to college, because the percentage of someone going to college is getting assaulted is pretty high in a campus. Unfortunately, that's the statistics, that's the reality. And so we've definitely have had workshops of like, how do I have this conversation with my son or daughter to be like being safe when you're not living with me anymore and you're off to college. Those are definitely conversations that parents are wanting to have, and how to plan and how to have those. So we are a great resource, and we are here to support our community, how to have those tough conversations.
Yeah, and handing your 18-year-old a can of pepper spray and saying bye is not it.
And then, of course, I mean, the infinitely tougher conversation is if someone, you know, wants to talk to you about a sexual assault that they experienced. Do you all have, tips for people who maybe would receive that, if someone comes to you and says, I want to talk to you about this experience, I guess, how do you have advice for the people who would receive that? And how do you have those conversations with people, you know? Yeah, I guess, would you have tips about that?
Validate their feelings. Like, I think, again, going back, there's no normal way of processing your trauma. I think it's really, really listening to them and validating their feelings, and also asking them, what do you need in this moment right now? How can I support you? How can, like, let's safety plan. Let's figure out a plan to support you, but feel what you're feeling right now. because this is a safe space for you to do that.
And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's easy to sit here and say, you know, this is the right thing to say, but there are lots of emotions happening. Having a son or a daughter come to you and say, I've been sexually assaulted, is terrifying and heartbreaking. You know, and it's okay to feel terrified and heartbroken, but at the same time, it can't be about you. It has to be about them, and it has to be about, like Claudia said, validating whatever feelings that they are feeling. And that may mean, you know, that you need to say, I love you and I'm so sorry that you went through that, but I need a minute to process this and I'll come back and talk to you. You know, that's totally okay to say, because in that moment, especially if you're a parent, you can entirely fall apart. And that wouldn't help anyone. So, you know, I'm so sorry that you experienced this, and I love you, and I want to talk about with this with you, but I need a minute, is absolutely the right thing to say in some situations.
As you both think about our community and the resources we offer, I mean, I continue to be astonished by the amount of resources that the Resource Center offers. But if you each had, I mean, a magic wand and could change one thing about our community, add something that you think would help survivors of sexual assault, domestic abuse, and reduce the prevalence of it in our community, what's something you each would change?
Awareness in transitional housing, I think, are like huge factors. Just having it be something that we talk about from a young age, and it's totally normal to talk about. And then on the flip side of that, kind of a more immediate need is transitional housing. If somebody is in a situation that's dangerous, especially if it's intimate partner violence, you know, they need to get out of that situation. But oftentimes in our area especially, there's no good way to do that. And so if there was a possibility of providing housing for survivors for a month or two while they get back on their feet and reestablish themselves, that would be a game changer.
Yeah, and I think, I don't necessarily, this would be like a one thing, but like living in a small rural community, you know, not being a bystander. If you see something and it's iffy and you're at the bar, like, say something, because I definitely have witnessed it in this town where someone's extremely intoxicated and someone's trying to come up and go home with them, knowing that this person can't give consent. So I think I encourage like our community to really stick out for each other, just like with COVID, how we've been processing and doing all this. The same goes for sexual assault. Don't be a bystander. Don't turn your head away and be like, that doesn't concern me, it's not my business. You know, because at the end of the day, like, we live in this community. It's a huge festival community. There's a lot of alcohol. There's a lot of drugs. And there's no excuse to be a bystander and kind of turn your head at all. Yeah. And so I encourage everyone, anywhere, if you see something, don't just turn a head. Like, say something to the bartender. I think, ideally, I would love to go in and give these trainings to bartenders and restaurants of how to be preventative, and if you see something, like, can we put a coaster down and call this number? Like, I think I want to move in that direction where there is more transparency and awareness in our community about sexual assault.
Well, we are almost out of time. Listeners, if you are listening and have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 970-728-4333. Again, 970-728-4333. And as we draw this hour to a close, I really just want to ask both of you if there's just any closing thoughts or comments that you want to share about sexual assault, the Resource Center, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, anything.
It's such a broad question. I think it goes back to what Claudia was just saying. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So talk to your kids, talk to each other. It's no longer time to stay silent about any of this. You know, the Resource Center is here. We believe you. We will listen to you. And we will offer support in any way that we can. And not only the resource center, but, you know, there are lots of people in the schools that, you know, there are trusted adults for teens. There are friends and neighbors, you know, find your support network and start talking about it. It's going to do a lot more damage to keep it to yourself in the long run.
Yeah, I don't have much to say, but just kind of like, you know, any questions or anything, we're here to support our community. Like, I think a lot of the times is like, I do wear a lot of hats in this community and I never turn anyone away, even if it doesn't fall under our services. I will navigate a way to put you in the right direction. But when it comes to like sexual assault, it's okay to hypothetically talk about like someone you know and this happened, and later on you build that trust and you were like, that was me. It's okay. We're not going to be upset. It's like I said, everybody processes trauma in a different way. And if it makes you feel coming in and just talking about this happened to my friend, and then a year later you say and disclose it was me, we're still going to be supportive.
Yep.
Like, I think that's kind of the culture that we're trying to build in our organization.
And we understand that there's kind of a gap in services in the Ridgeway-Ouray area. And we just want to make sure to point out that, you know, our service area is San Miguel County in the west end of Montrose. But, you know, that's not only residents. If you work in San Miguel County or the west end of Montrose, you also qualify for our services. So there is a little bit of a loophole there for people that live outside our service area.
Mm. At the top of the hour, we shared the number for the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 1-800-656-HOPE. It's 1-800-656-4673. And I was just going to ask both of you if there were any other resources you wanted to share. And Shannon, you just threw out a lovely, really nicely designed brochure for the Resource Center. The Resource Center helpline, 970-728-5660. Once again, the number for the San Miguel Resource Center helpline, 970-728-5660, operated 24/7, 365 days a year. What are the services people can access at the helpline?
Through the helpline directly is advocacy for the most part, since it is over the telephone. To access services for financial aid and therapy assistance and things like that, you will have to come in and, you know, there's paperwork that we'll need to fill out to get those services. But through the helpline is emotional support, advocacy, access to other resources or referrals to other resources.
Well, the only way we can close this hour, I think, is with a song. And we got a couple options left. Which one do you guys want to go out with?
Survivor.
Okay, that's it.
I Will Survive?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then we had to go out with that one. we are going to go out with, of course, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. Do either of you want to say anything about this? Or I don't know.
I mean, it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
So
it's a classic.
Yes.
Listeners, I'm Matt Hoyt from the Coto News team. This has been Off the Record. We've been joined by Shannon Dean, Executive Director of the San Miguel Resource Center, Claudia Garcia-Curcio, Community Engagement Manager at the San Miguel Resource Center. I hope that you all participate in Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I hope that anyone out there who needs help is able to seek the help they need or support the people they know who do need help. This is KOTO. Have a great rest of your Tuesday night. You're not welcome.
now.